I'm Derek Thompson, longtime writer with The Atlantic magazine on tech, culture, and politics. There is a lot of noise out there, and my goal is to cut through the headlines, loud tweets, and hot takes in my new podcast, Plain English. I'll talk to some of the smartest people I know to give you clear viewpoints and memorable takeaways. Plain English starts November 16th. Listen for free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 Euro pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
Manche geben immer alles. Für andere fühlt sich das aber vielleicht einfach zu viel an. Ganz egal, wie du zu dem Thema stehst. Dokumentiere deine Entscheidung jetzt ganz einfach digital im Organspenderegister. Ja oder nein? Deine Entscheidung ist nur einen Klick entfernt. Fühlt sich bestimmt gut an, das geregelt zu haben, oder? Jetzt online eintragen auf organspende-register.de.
We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, where if you're not listening to the Prestige TV podcast, you are missing out, my friends. Me and Chris Ryan and Ryan Rosillo, we went on there Wednesday night. We broke down the season premiere, 2 hours, 20 minutes of Yellowstone. It was really two episodes. What a show. I don't know if it's technically a prestige show, but for me it is. It feels prestigious. It's certainly the most watched cable show that we have. It had like Game of Thrones numbers for that first episode. But we talked about a lot of the plots on that thing. You'll enjoy it if you like that show. And I think going forward, every week, Chris and Ryan are going to break it down, maybe with a couple special guests like myself. Natalie Rubin watches that show. So stay tuned on that. We got Succession going on there twice a week as well. Doing some Curb. Doing some Dexter. Dexter was really good. The comeback Dexter episode, I was not expecting to enjoy it as much as I did. So there's a lot of good stuff coming too. Check it out, the Prestige TV pod. Don't forget about Plain English with Derek Thompson. Mention it, you might have heard the trailer at the top. He's been on this podcast many times. One of the smartest guests we've ever had in this pod. Made sense for him to finally host his own thing. He's going to have a rotating cast of regulars, and we're hoping that's going to be one of the smartest podcasts on the internets. So check that one out. Don't forget about the Ringer Gambling Show as well, where you can hear Warren Sharp and Joe House and Chris Vernon and Ben Solak. He's going to be with House there on Friday if you want some gambling stuff. We're going to be doing stuff later here with Peter Schrager, Million Dollar Picks, as always. Coming up first, our guy Jonathan Charks talking Paul George and best rookies and what's going on in the Western Conference and a whole lot more. This is a really good podcast. You know who we should bring in? You know who should we bring in? You know, I'm thinking about music lately because we're only a week away from the Music Box series. HBO. Thursday, November 18th, Patriots Falcons going head to head with my Music Box series. That's fine because guess what? You can just watch it on HBO Max. You don't have to watch it right away on HBO at 8 o'clock, but if you really want to, that'd be great because we're running Jagged, the first film about Alanis Morissette that we did. First of five straight Thursdays, the Music Box series. Spent, I don't know, 3.5 years of my life on this. You might as well just, it's 7 hours of your life you could watch. They're all excellent. Really, really proud of this series. You might have seen the Woodstock 99 one that we did, that we ran this summer as a sneak preview. Five more coming. Alanis is first. Next Thursday, we are now a week away. And if you don't get to see it live on HBO, it's going to be right on HBO Max. So there you go. Speaking of great music, Pearl Jam! All right, taping this. It's a little past noon Pacific time on Thursday, so before the games tonight. Jonathan Charks is here from The Ringer. We're going to talk a bunch of stuff. We're going to start with Paul George. I think we have both noticed the Paul George thing that's happening this year. It's only 10 games, but if you think in 2018 when he made first team All-NBA, he was 28-8-4. 44%, 39%, 86% were the percentages. He's basically there this year with the Clippers, 27-8-5. Relatively close percentages. What's interesting is this is a top six playoff team, Charks, Here are their next four best players. And this might be debatable. This is just what I wrote down. Reggie Jackson is clearly their number two. Batum might have the case for number three because of the two-way stuff. And then fourth place is a tie between Luke Kennard and Terrence Mann, I would say. And somehow Paul George has lifted these guys and has gone to a level that we saw in the playoffs last year that we've seen from him in the past. To me, he's one of the six best guys in the league right now, plus LeBron when LeBron comes back. What are you watching? What are you seeing?
I think it's funny you mentioned, like, we were talking about this too. It all goes back to, it's easy to forget sometimes how hard it is to be the number two on a team, right? It takes a lot of sacrifice. When Paul George is playing with Kawhi, he cannot be the Paul George we're seeing now. He's off the ball a lot more. He's playing off someone else. It's just not his team. When it's your team, it's just you get into your stuff a little easier, right? Like Paul George right now, he can get into his whole bag. He can get to the post-ups, pick and rolls, spot-ups, pull-ups. When Kawhi's out there, Kawhi's the man. He's playing off Kawhi a lot of the game. And maybe he only gets like, 12 minutes when Kawhi's out. And now it's my turn to run the team. Hard to get into a rhythm. Whereas now, if Paul George has a slow start to the game, he knows, okay, I'll still get like 12 more shots. Like I have time to get back to what I do. And now I think, and you saw it last year in the playoffs, as soon as Kawhi went down, all of a sudden Paul George went back up. And it's just a good reminder of how much role impacts even the best players.
Yeah, it's funny because it ties into a situation that's happened with the Celtics right now with Tatum and Brown, where for the first time, it's really been the whole season, the Celtic fans are kind of looking at each other going, does this make sense? Do these two guys bring the best out of each other? Should we trade one of them? And it's not like we have to trade one of them, but it's a conversation. And it's not the question of do these two guys make sense together. To me, it's what you just laid out. Does the situation make sense really for Jaylen Brown? Is he overqualified to be in that Robin spot? And this is what we've seen Paul George kind of vacillate, where we saw in Indiana, he was carrying them. Didn't know if he had the personality to be anything more than the best guy on like a 45-win team. Goes to OKC, same thing. Not a ton of playoff success. But we kind of pigeonholed him as he's a little overqualified to be the second banana, but not quite good enough to be the main guy. I thought in the playoffs last year, he shed that, at least for me. And the only reason that they lost to the Suns, I think, was just they were so worn down. To do what they did, they were a limited roster anyway. I think he just wore down a little and they didn't have the horses. But I look big picture. He's doing stuff as the focal point of an offense and as somebody who's creating and picking his spots and really does make other guys better. And this is what I want from Tatum, right? As selfishly, this is where I want Tatum to get to, where 2-3 years from now, he's somebody that can feel out a game, pick his spots, take good shots, kind of know when to ease back and take over and things like that. Paul George is there. And to me, he's clearly a first team All-NBA guy through 10 games.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about the other day, is because it's the versatility of his game. It's that he can impact the game in so many ways. And then you go back to the fact that, he's 6'8". And then there's so many games where, like, against the Grizzlies or the Blazers, they're putting 6'3" guys on him. It's like, I can just score over those guys at will. And then I can make the double team off the pass. And he's just a very versatile game. And I think the Celtics thing is a great, and here's the difference, right? When Paul George goes to the Clippers, he has already been the man somewhere else. He's like, I've lived that life. I've had my chance as the guy. And as much fun as it is, I can look at the fact that Kawhi Leonard is a two-time finals MVP. Okay, like,
right,
I love
I'm
myself.
Trumped.
I can respect the reality that Kawhi's better than me. Whereas I don't think Jaylen Brown is like, oh my God, Jason Tatum is the best player ever. I've got to get behind him. Jaylen Brown's a young guy who's coming up himself. He's like, I've made an all-star team. We won the East Conference Finals together 3 years ago. Like, we're the same guy. I'm not necessarily going to stand behind you because I got to see who I can be as my own personal player. And I don't think it's like him being selfish, really. It's just kind of, he's a young guy. If he was like 28, maybe it'd be different. He's 23.
Right. And Paul George, when he was 23, Jaylen Brown's age now, that was 2014, the Pacers. That was when the second year when they went toe-to-toe with LeBron and Wade and those guys and really had established himself as the next up and coming two-way forward after LeBron and Durant. I think his defense isn't where it was 7 years ago. I don't think there's any question. He was the big appeal with him 7, 8 years ago was the athleticism and the two-way stuff, which is a lot like Jaylen. And when Jaylen got thrown in different stuff, and I remember there was the year Kawhi was being shopped and Toronto ended up getting him. It was a big debate in Boston about why wouldn't they give up Jaylen Brown for Kawhi? And I was against it. And I was on this podcast saying, if you look at him versus Paul George, the career arc is very similar. Like the stuff Jaylen's been able to do in his first two seasons versus Paul George. The difference is Paul George eventually, once Granger was officially done, which was pretty fast, the team had to run through him and he kind of learned and he got the reps. And that's what Jaylen hasn't gotten. But it's also why I'm so afraid to even think about trading him and that why I don't want them to trade him. Because I do feel like what you laid out at the top, we're seeing kind of 80 to 85% of what Jaylen can do. And with Paul George last 2 years in the Clippers, right, it was 80 to 85%. Right now we're seeing the 100%. And it stands out. He's got the swagger. I also feel this happens in hoops sometimes. He had a pivotal moment in the playoffs last year where it's weird to say this, but it feels like his career could have gone either way. You know what I mean? Where it was like he sucked in the bubble. It became a whole thing. And that was threatening to kind of become who he was, right? I remember this happened to Chris Webber to some degree in the 02, 03, 04 range where he was one of the best players in the league. But in the playoffs, there was something missing, especially in the big moments. And he had a couple fork in the road moments and he was who he was. He wasn't like at that KG Duncan level. He's right below. For George, when Kawhi went out, it seemed like this moment where it was either he was going to crater or he was going to rise up. I felt like he rose up. I thought he was amazing, you know, and he just kind of ran out of gas. But, you know, don't you feel like sometimes there's like a career gut check moment with some of these guys?
Well, I mean, I think too, it's the chances aren't always there forever, right? You only get so many chances at this thing when you're the guy on a team around you and a chance to win. And either you make the best of them or you don't. And I, you know, for as great as Paul George is, if Kawhi comes back in 4 months and is healthy, guess what? Paul George is going to have to go back to that spot up role. We're not talking about first team All-NBA anymore. And that's just the reality of a zero sum thing.
Don't you think if Kawhi does come back, they'll ease him into it? And in a weird way, he'll become the 1B and he'll be playing like 25 minutes a game and they'll be kind of easing him in and, you know, kind of dabbling with him.
Would this be the 95 Bulls where Scottie gets the 1 year and Jordan's coming back for the comeback, right? That'd be the 1 year where that's kind of like that, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Paul George's career is way more interesting than I think I realized. I deep dove him last night and today. First of all, he's made one first team All-NBA and 5 third teams. I tried to think who are the best 21st century small forwards. So the cutoff would be 2000 on. And you make the list and it's like, obviously LeBron, then Durant, then Kawhi. That has to be the top three. Pierce versus McGrady is a debate for four. To me, it's like a no-brainer. It's Pierce. He was way more durable. He was a better two-way player. He had a winning pedigree.
You would say that though.
Right. Other people are like, no, my God, T-Mac. But to me, it's Pierce. And Pierce also came through on big stages. He outdueled LeBron in a game 7. Like he had real moments, you know. I'd have McGrady 6th. And then George is clearly 7th. And Sean Marion is 8th. And then it drops off. But when you think of it in that context, like we're 21 years into the century and Paul George is one of the 7 best small forwards we've had this century. I don't know if people would think that. You know?
Yeah, so much of it is perception. He played in a small market. They were good early. As he got better, the team tanked around him. He went to OKC, right? So much of that, Paul George is at that level right below the truly historically great players, right? Kawhi, yep. I mean, like LeBron, Kawhi, Durant, those guys are going to be historically great regardless. It doesn't even matter. Paul George is right below that where it's all about the situation he's put in, you know? So
right. But on the other hand, he made back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals. Last year, he made the Western Conference Finals after they lost their best guy with a team that was really built around those two guys and then a bunch of minimum guys and cross-your-finger guys. So 3 Western Finals, that's better than anything T-Mac ever did.
For sure. And I mean, talking about like the series last year, like for as great as Donovan Mitchell is, you start looking at skills. Oh, Paul George is 7 inches taller. He's a better distributor. He's a little more steady in terms of running the team. He's just a better player. And Donovan's just a great player. Because there's just very, very few guys who can do as many things as what Paul George can do. And that's what I always try to come back to is skill sets, ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, thing, you know, situations come and go. It's like, okay, how many different things can this guy do and at what level? And when you start stacking skills, there's just not very many guys. You know, like it's funny when you like doing a lot of draft stuff, you often talk to young wings. And the guy they always bring up is Paul George. I remember talking to Mikhail Bridges when he came out. A friend of mine did a piece on him. And he's like, who do you see yourself like? And the guy was like, oh, I want to be like Paul George. And then I did a piece a couple of years ago on Josh Richardson. And I'm asking him about who does he kind of want to be like? And he's like, yeah, I want to be Paul George. And it made sense to me because I was like, okay, no one's saying to themselves, well, I can be Kevin Durant. Like I'm a 7-foot freak who just shorts.
Right.
Yeah. No one's saying I can be LeBron James. No one's saying even Kawhi, like, the strongest man alive, basically. These guys are like, but Paul George is like the best version of a good player. You know what I mean? So like even every good player can say, maybe I can become him one day. That's like an actual goal for me.
Like Mikhail Bridges could say, I want to be Sean Marion. I was watching the 2007 Suns on ESPN Classic. And that's who I should be on a really good playoff team. I said George was 7th. He's 6th. So the list again, LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, Pierce, McGrady, Paul George, Marion. And then it drops. Then you go into like Peja, Jamal Mashburn, stuff like that.
In terms of current players, the guy I think it's PG and Jimmy Butler. Those are the kind of guys in that same level. Very different kinds of players. They're both right below the superstar elites. I think those two guys are kind of the comparison point.
I had Butler at 8th. He needs to bank 2 more years. He weirdly doesn't have the resume yet other than like that one finals thing. And he had a couple of fun playoff series. The other thing with Paul George, I was trying to think of another player kind of after the Chris Paul, LeBron generation, Durant generation, who's had more what ifs, right? Because like he fucking broke his leg. That was basically an 18-month injury, and he broke his leg at the worst possible point, like right as he's about to hit his prime, and has this injury that is no different than the Gordon Hayward injury and stuff like that. So comes back from that. It felt like he wasn't ever going to be quite the same, and then he was. All of a sudden, he was kind of better than he ever was. So he has that. Early on in the Neander thing, what if Danny Granger never gets hurt is a great what if. Because Danny Granger was the best guy in that team. Like he averaged 26 games in a season. And they were supposed to have this kind of double-barreled Kawhi Paul George kind of thing. And he's just, his knees gave out and that was it. And you look at like 2013-14, I feel like they could have stolen 14 with a healthy Granger because that Heat team was dying to lose to somebody. But Granger didn't have him. You have this Celtics summer 2017 trade where the Celtics think they're getting him. They really do. That wasn't like bullshit. They thought they were getting him. And then all of a sudden he's going to OKC for what turned out to be an awesome trade. Oladipo and Sabonis. At the time, everybody's like, what? You know, and I was one of them. I was like, what? Why did they take our picks that might never turn into great players? And they ended up getting 2 really good guys. But if they go to the Celtics, if he goes to the Celtics, Kyrie never happens. You have Paul George, you have Hayward, you've Horford, Jalen, like that's a whole sliding door.
I've got a what if for you too. Also, what if the Lakers trade Ingram for him in that summer? He gets to LA.
That's a good
first
one. You're right.
He plants his flag there. And I think really for Paul George, this is kind of, it seems silly to say, but if he was playing with LeBron, I think him and LeBron have more complementary skill sets than him and Kawhi. I think they'd be even better together.
Well, that leads to my next what if, because the reason they didn't trade Brandon Ingram for him was because I think they thought they were getting him down the road because there was all these smoke signals being sent.
Yeah.
So why do we have to trade Brandon Ingram for him? We'll keep him. We'll get Paul George later. And then that summer when it seemed like Paul George was going to sign with them, when he spent the 1 year in OKC.
Oh, yeah. The party in OKC. Yeah. Unfinished business.
summer of 2018. I will go to my grave thinking something fishy happened with that. I think the Lakers thought they were getting him and LeBron. And something weird happened. I don't know if there was like a tampering thing or something. It just never added up to me. He ends up re-signing out of nowhere. And then that becomes a what if because he could have gone LeBron. They still would have had enough to trade for Anthony Davis. It could have been LeBron and Anthony Davis.
It was that thing. Remember that thing Jason did for us where he was making fun of, they had like the decision. And he's like, I don't know, they had the Philip. And that has always been the knock on him is like, whoever's in the room last with Paul George can convince him.
Convince him to do whatever.
So like Russ kind of convinced him to stay. And that's the other part of it too. I guess hard to get into is like, I don't know.
Well, there's 3 more what ifs. What if Kawhi just stays in Toronto? totally conceivable that could have happened, right? They win the title. And if he stays there, so then Paul George just stays in OKC with Westbrook. Now Westbrook for Chris Paul never happens. Now there's like seven other what ifs coming off that. You have the what if Kawhi doesn't get hurt last summer, because I think they make the finals. I think they would have beaten the Suns with Kawhi. I really do. I think that was a bad matchup for the Suns. And then the last one is a what if that's in motion right now. What if Kawhi can come back in time this season? Because the West is open. The Warriors, I think, are the safest pick. Utah's the best regular season team. I don't think anyone trusts them in the playoffs. Phoenix is seems like they're in motion. And then the Lakers are the wild card team. But it is open. And if Kawhi comes back in time, I think that's a what if in motion.
Yeah. I'm actually working on a Clippers piece. And I think there's two other things that really makes me kind of sneakily confident in them. Number one, if the West is fairly even, and if these playoff series are super tight and it becomes coaches playing chess, I'll take Ty Lue over any coach in the league in terms of playing chess. So here's a funny story with that. So the other day, the Clippers played the Wolves. The Wolves have been like kind of going, they're like 3-1. They beat the Bucks. Everyone's really excited about the Wolves for like whatever. They play the Clippers twice. Ty Lue says, okay, I see you're playing Kat and Josh Okogie together. What I'm going to do is I'm sticking my center on Josh Okogie because he can't score. And I'm double teaming Kat everywhere. He does that. The Wolves lose both games. I think they basically haven't won a game since, because the rest of the league was like, oh, that's a good idea. What Ty Lue just did, like the Wolves are done. Ty Lue wrote a book, the book's out, and the Wolves are done. That's the kind of coach Ty Lue is. Like he might make a mistake in a playoff series, but he will correct it fast. And he's got some versatile pieces. And I think the second smart thing the Clippers have done, which kind of hides their value. So they traded for Eric Bledsoe, who obviously has a ton of warts. I mean, we don't want to sit and talk about that. One thing he is better when he's in a small ball situation where he's the one non-shooter, right? Like Bledsoe can kind of be like this weird Bruce Brown kind of player, point center, crazy athletic, four shooters around him. So the Clippers know we have this kind of wild card, but during the regular season, we're going to play Zubac, play Hardenstein. And like, if you look at the on-off numbers,
I like Hardenstein, by the way.
He's been pretty good.
Yeah.
When Bledsoe plays with those guys, they're not very good because it's two non-shooters. But we know in a playoff series, we're going to bench them. Like we benched them against the Jazz. All of a sudden, Bledsoe becomes valuable in a five-out situation. So I think that those two pieces for me are why I'm like, the Clippers have a shot at this, even if Kawhi isn't himself when he comes back.
Interesting Ty Lue point. He definitely cemented that to some degree. Last year, I mean, his 2016 finals performance was just tremendous. You know, that became a battle of wills. He had the right guys out there. I really like watching some of the games from that series, because game four from 2016, I think, is a fascinating one, because the Warriors kind of solve and break the Cavs and it's over. And then they don't realize they're going to lose Draymond for game five yet, but the series is done. They've solved them. And then the will of that Cavs team to come back. And then you watch that last game, which is basically a rock fight and a dick measuring contest. And Ty just had the right guys out there when it mattered. And I thought last year he did a great job too. That Utah comeback, which I went to both of the last two home games. I thought he was amazing in those games, because they were overmatched. That should not have been, you know, Mitchell was a little banged up, but that Utah should have gotten out of that series. It's kind of nuts that they didn't win that series. It's why I can't take them seriously this year.
It's because Ty was like, oh, we can go small against them. We'll pull Gobert out of the paint. And then there's no other defensive players. And we'll have Terrence Mann score 40. Even in that first round series against the Mavs, and like Ty Lue. So I would say in that series against the Mavs, he probably stayed big a little too long. But when he had to make the move, he made the move. And it's like crazy. You look at the minutes from game one against the Mavs to like game five, Ty Lue basically changed his entire team. Like the rotation got completely flipped super fast. And it's like, okay, this isn't working. I'm on to the next thing. I'm not wasting around. And that's like, man, there's very few coaches where you're like, not only, because the other part of it too, when you make adjustments, right? These sample sizes are so small, you almost throw the numbers out the window, because you're talking about like 8-minute samples. It's purely your instinct and your conviction on what's right. And you just got to go with it. And he seems to be right more often than not.
It's a team that probably has a trade to make if they need to do it too, right? They have Bledsoe at $18 million. They have Marcus Morris at $15.6 million. Canard's at 13.3. They have the Ibaka expiring at 9.7. So they can package stuff together and swing it if there becomes a guy available. I want to talk about coaches, but let's take a quick break.
Achtung, es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knete ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Der Barra ist der irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 Gigabyte für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd.
Le Barra,
deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter lebara.de.
You mentioned Ty Lue before. It's funny, I'd been thinking about him this week because I think he's a Coach of the Year candidate. I know it's only 10 games. It's stupid to be like, this guy's MVP, this guy's Coach of the Year. I've been really impressed by him. Been really impressed by Wes Unseld on the Wizards because it's not just that that team is, I think, better than a lot of us thought they were going to be, but they've added so many new pieces. And I don't think people realize how hard it is to just throw all these dudes together and then have it seem coherent. The stuff they're doing defensively, I think, has been really smart. Like, their out-of-bounds plays have been good. Like, I think he's been probably my favorite new coach. And then you have, obviously, Spoelstra. I think Kerr's done a great job in Golden State with just the movement they have and their ability now to win if Steph doesn't even play well. Any other coaches stand out to you? Because we always rip on coaches here. I thought we'd have two nice minutes about coaches.
I have to look at a list. I think, like, what I love about a coach, like with Kerr, Kerr's an example, he's found a role for Gary Payton too, where right. Kind of the same role, the Eric Bledsoe role we're talking about, where we're going to have this super athletic guy in a small ball situation where his lack of a jumper becomes less of an issue. And what I look for in coaches is, like, can you find roles for players that make sense to fit their games? And I think that's, like, the fundamental part of coaching. A lot of the other stuff, you can get assistance, run up the right schemes, like run, you know, however you want to do it. But it's identifying roles for players. And being in Dallas for so long, Rick Carlisle, we can talk chapter and verse about his off way he handles people. One thing he was always really good at was defining roles for limited players that made them better than who they are. And that, to me, is the number one hallmark of a great coach.
Stevens was great. I follow this Instagram account that's called, I think, like, Boston Sports Throwback. And they put all these fun clips up from the past, half of which I don't forget. I didn't even remember because I'm old. But they ran a clip from Stevens's first. Remember that first year when it was like Evan Turner, Kelly Olynyk, Jordan Crawford?
Was that the Isaiah Thomas team?
Isaiah Thomas showed up.
Okay.
It was like the island of misfit toys. And it was all these guys who people had kind of liked but couldn't find a home. And then Stevens just kind of figured out, like, oh, use Evan Turner this way. And, oh, Jordan Crawford's this. And he just kind of solved five guys' careers.
He made Evan Turner a lot of money, that's for sure.
Yeah, he really did. But you're right. That's a good point about coaches that, like, Hartenstein. Ty Lue says something in Hartenstein. He's like, all right, this is what you are. The best players right now list. I talked about this a little with Jackie. I think right now it's Giannis, KD, Jokic, and Curry. And then Luka's kind of knocking at the door. But his team is so weird that I don't even know how to judge Luka. You're right there.
He's had a tough start. I mean, I would say Luka's definitely in the I play my way into shape school.
It's a bummer.
Way into shape. And it doesn't always look great, I'll tell you that. And the team itself is really kind of, oh gosh, talking about the Mavs, like, they're still figuring out who they are. And I think right now, like, Dallas, we talked about in the pod a few months ago, and they were trying. I was holding optimistic. Oh, KP got a whole offseason to be healthy, et cetera, et cetera. And then he comes into the year and gets lower back tightness almost immediately. And yep. Dallas right now is trapped in a situation where they don't think they can play KP at the five full time and keep him healthy, which is a fair thought. The problem is, if you're playing KP at the four, who is your five? And their other big men are very, very limited, especially because Maxi Kleber is out. So now it's like you're playing KP and Dwight Powell, or it's like Willie Cauley-Stein or Boban. And it's like these lineups with these two relatively unskilled bigs who don't move very well, very hard to win. But you're stuck with these lineups because KP can't play the five full time. And it's just kind of depressing. It's the KP thing is, oh God, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, it feels like it's hitting the last couple laps. There would be but some
who would
sort
they trade
of
him for?
Trade with him at some point.
We were like, I was talking to some of the Mavs writers, like, I don't know, John Wall, like, who would he trade KP for at this point?
Oh my God. John Wall, Houston basically, they basically have announced we're not even going to play him and we're just going to spend $80 million on this guy for one draft pick that we got for trading
That's
Russell
probably
Westbrook.
KP's trade value right now, unfortunately.
So this brings us to the West, because I feel the same way. The Mavs, I think the league is more talented. I was talking to somebody about that today, where it's just like, it's fucking loaded. You look at Marvin Bagley in Sacramento, who's not playing and who's unhappy, and they clearly have to trade him. In the old days, there were always like four or five teams that would be like, ah, fuck it. We'll roll the dice with Marvin. Sounds great. Bring him in. This year, everybody's kind of got guys. You know, nobody has that 20 minutes. The only team that I think would have the 20 minutes for him is OKC. But they're just hell-bent on proving that Poku isn't a catastrophe, even though there's not a lot of evidence. He's just bad. But OKC is a team that maybe could roll the dice with them. Other than that, we have so much talent that people don't even have the 20, 25 minutes to roll the dice with somebody like that. Maybe New Orleans could do it. I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, there's three or four tanking teams, and other than that's pretty competitive.
Yeah. So when I think about that and the Porzingis piece and like, should Dallas start taking flyers on guys? Like, are they at that stage where you're just, you know, a wink and a prayer? You're just, it can't be worse than what we have now. Because I look at the West, Golden State, Utah, and Phoenix are top three. Mm-hmm. Clips, Nuggets, Lakers, in some order, next three. And the Lakers, obviously, when LeBron comes back, we'll see where it goes with Westbrook. I'm done talking about Westbrook. I just think he's a disaster. I don't care what happened last night. And then Grizz, Mavericks would be the third tier. And then it drops again to Sacramento, Portland, Minnesota, San Antonio. But my question is, should the Mavs even be on the Grizz tier? Are they a tier lower, even with Luka?
There's things they can do. They've got to move things around. The other thing I think is hard with Dallas, because the time for Carlisle was clearly over. But the one thing he was really good at was trying new things. He wasn't just going to do the same thing over.
Yeah,
and we'll see how Kid does. Kid's going to have to make some adjustments. They've got a road trip coming up where they play Phoenix twice on the road and the Clippers twice on the road. We'll see. My guess would be after that road trip, adjustments start happening, unless they start playing a heck of a lot better than they have so far.
So you have like six in the West, then it drops. In the East is bizarre because Brooklyn, who knows what they're going to look like in May? Who knows, you know, what Milwaukee's going to look like when they have all their guys back? I could see them winning 20 straight. Who knows how long Miami can stay healthy? And then who knows with Philly how the Simmons thing plays out? But you figure that's the top four, at least on paper. But then you could argue Chicago is probably a safer bet than every team I just mentioned except Milwaukee and Miami, because that team can score. And I got that one wrong. I thought they were going to be a fantasy team. When you watch them, they make sense. Sometimes just rosters make sense. They did a really nice job of like Ken Lonzo, DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, and Vooch all make sense together. And who would be the perfect fifth guy? Pat Williams gets hurt. Caruso is like the perfect fifth guy.
The perfect
like,
fifth guy.
Literally yeah. Perfect. So now they have this five-man rotation that when I watch basketball on a Wednesday night like last night, I like their five guys as much as anybody I'm watching. Are you seeing the same thing?
I think like the way to look at it with the Bulls, as we're talking about what skill sets, right? It's about finding roles. So, okay, in Chicago, I've got Zach LaVine, primary scorer. DeMar DeRozan, primary playmaker. Lonzo and Caruso, elite defensively, spot up guys. Vooch, high post, passer, secondary scorer.
Mismatch destroyer, Vooch. Certain teams where it's like, I got this, guys.
Yeah, the Mavs played KP on him and it didn't work very well, but anyways. And so like, not only do all five of those guys have their own role, it's like within those roles, okay, Lonzo and Caruso, not the best shooters. Well, Lonzo actually is shooting pretty well, but okay, LaVine's a great shooter. DeRozan, same thing. So it's like when skill sets intersect like that, it allows guys to play bigger than what they are. It's a sum is better than their parts, right? And I think that's the biggest thing is, all their top five players have roles to where they can all be good without taking away from anybody else, right? Of those top five guys, the only guy who's really taken a step back is Vooch, basically. Everyone else is the best version of themselves in this team, and all their skill sets align, and that's when you can kind of get magic happening. And that's what's happening in Chicago right now.
Yeah, one of the things I love to look at is just like, what kind of shots are you getting in the last 6 minutes of a game? Just what are you getting? And that's why I have trouble with guys like De'Aaron Fox and Colin Sexton, who ironically goes out last night. And you watch the Cavs in that Wizards game. They end up losing at the tail end because Kuzma made two threes. But clearly their best backcourt is Garland with Rubio together, because those guys Garland gets good shots for himself. Rubio can create shots for all kinds of guys. And it's just the team flows better. When I watch the Bulls, they just seem to have real options at the end of games. Like, they're hard to play. When you're going against them, you're like, damn it. Like, all right, LaVine has the ball, but you don't really want to go one-on-one with LaVine. You want to at least shade somebody over. But then if DeRozan has any sort of space at all, it's done. He makes everything from 15 to 20 feet. You got Vucevic lurking around. And then Caruso, who's made big shots for 3 years now.
Yeah.
And then Lonzo is just really fun to play with. Like, there was a play last night that I think Zach got a technical foul on, but he thought he got fouled. It went back the other way. They get a stop. And did you see Lonzo just zings like a 58-yard line drive to LaVine?
He had the double.
Did the 360. Yeah. It's like, Lonzo's fun to play with. And I'll never understand why New Orleans didn't want him. I'm going to always be bummed out Boston couldn't get him last summer. It seemed like it was called in, but... but yeah, I was wrong on the Bulls. I didn't expect this.
And it's like, I know for the Mavs, you're like, man, Lonzo and Caruso, those are two killers to have next to a guy who doesn't play defense in LaVine. It's like, that's who Luka needs. And if there's one thing, last Mavs point, Frank Ntilikina could be one of those guys. That to me is the one thing optimism for Dallas is like, finding these, you got to find these guys who can guard multiple positions. And they've got two, and that's covering up DeRozan and LaVine on defense. And it's like that intersection. Everybody just fits together. It looks good.
So they lost to the Knicks by one in a really good game. They lost two to Philly, basically 4 days away from each other. And other than that, they've beaten anybody. And they have a couple good wins. Like, they beat Utah. They beat Brooklyn. They beat the Toronto-Cincinnati Bob Huggins 1993 Toronto Raptors. What do you think of that team? That team should just full court press. Seems like that would be the final piece for them. They're like a full court press away from being the single most annoying team for another team to play that we've had in like 20 years.
They've got to figure out the Siakam thing, because they were playing well without him. They're bringing him back.
Right.
I'm very curious if they can play Siakam, OG, and Barnes together. That to me is a really interesting front court. But Siakam, I think, has played two games and looked kind of up and down. He's got to get back into a rhythm. So for them, you kind of got to wait and see how he looks and how he's going to fit in with the rest of these new guys.
Or if that's a trade. Yeah, I watched the whole Celtic game last night, but there were four TVs going. They were at one point trying to play Siakam at center. And to your point, like, just going with the centerless, super athletic lineup didn't really work. They lost by like 16. But Barnes has been a delight. And I shout out to some of our Ringer people, because I couldn't see it. I don't follow college nearly the way you guys do, but it certainly seemed like it was going to be a project. I could see like the end result at age 25. I didn't see a world where he was going to come in right away and be a two-way guy like this. He's just got it. You can see it. And I thought it was really telling when Durant, who doesn't usually do this, but when he does it, he means it and it matters. In that press conference after he played him, where he had like a minute long monologue about Scottie Barnes, how good he was. And it's like, that's, you know, you're good when you're a rookie and KD is going to do a monologue after the game about you.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge Barnes guy. I think I was too caught up in the lack of a jumper, but he's just so big and fast. And I think that the early rookie thing is Scottie Barnes, Franz Wagner, Josh Giddey less than Evan Mobley. It's like really, really big, really fast guys who are pretty smart and skilled. And that skill set, those three, the first three for sure, they've come in like gangbusters and just been great at the start of the season.
Well, Mobley was a huge win for us. We were pretty adamant about that one.
I try to tell people.
Anyone that was a good one. I'm kind of actually shocked by how advanced he is. And we talked about it already in the pod, but I just don't see, if there's a redraft, I don't see how he doesn't go first. From just even what we've seen in 10 games, and people are going to be like, Cade's playing his way back. He looked good last night. I just think it's so much harder to find somebody like Mobley.
That's for sure.
Like a once every 5 years situation, whereas there's a guard every year in the draft.
And that's what we were talking. I remember we were doing that pod with us and Kyle and KOC back for the draft with Mobley. I think the thing people got caught up with Mobley, what happened was he played on this really poorly put together USC team with no guards. And like, oh, well, he's in like limited offensively. It's like, yes, he's a 7-foot guy with some guard skills, but he needs some guards. And at college, he didn't have them. He had no guards and no shooting. And his true abilities were somewhat hidden. But it was like, when you look at his actual traits, it's like absolutely huge, absolutely fat. Very, very rare to have that size, that speed, that skill. And with Mobley, the thing was truly, truly crazy about this guy is this is a guy who could be a defensive player of the year and also average a triple-double. That's his ceiling. He's got the elite passing plus the elite defense. And you just never see it at a player that size. I think, I'll just go ahead and say, I think Evan Mobley's chance to be the best player in the NBA one day. I think that's the kind of thing we're looking at, as a guy who's truly that level, that kind of big man, who's really a guard. It's like, there's never been a guy with his size and speed and his feel for the game. That combined together has allowed him to just do things that are really, I mean, for a 19-year-old, they're playing 3 7-footers together and it's still working because Mobley's just that good.
I 100% agree. I think if you look at the guys who have come into the last 5 or 6 drafts, really since Giannis. Luka. So Luka would be the last one. Who has a chance to be the most impactful guy in the league? I instead of best, I would use more impactful. Like, who has the best chance to just be on winning teams and to be on teams that contend for titles and win titles? Mobley's, I think, the safest bet of anybody from at least the last 3 drafts. And then if you're going to go last 10 years, he's on that list. Just because we know, like, if he hits the ceiling of all the stuff that we can see already, those guys win titles. Those guys are in conference finals. Those guys year after year are going to be in the mix because you can so easily build around those skills.
Yeah, and I think, and I wrote a big piece about this before the start of the season. And I think the big trend right now, and I think the next few years of the league, and you're seeing it also with the two guys in this year's draft, Paolo and Chet, is I think the worm is completely turned now where big men, the best big men are just guards who happen to have the size of big men. And it's like Bonchero, I don't know if you've seen him yet. It looks ridiculous. Have you watched the Duke game the other night?
I didn't see
He's very fun to watch. But he's basically like, what if a center played like Carmelo Anthony? And they're like, you know what? Don't even be a center. Just do like face up, 2 dribble pull-ups. Oh, I'm 6'10", 235, and I'm doing this. And to me, that's where the game is going. I think the reason Cade went above Mobley is because people were still caught up in the big wing thing. Oh, Cade's a big wing and play point. And yes, that was the thing for a while. But the new thing is just 7-footers who play like guards. And I look at like Giannis, KD, Anthony Davis. To me, those are the kind of players who win championships. Mobley can be in that category as he gets older. Those are the kind of guys I want at the top of the draft. Those are the ones. If I have a 7-footer who can be a guard, I'm going to beat you. I don't care about your guards. My guard is 7 feet tall.
Right. You can find the guards. There's a million guards now that are really good. It's an embarrassment of riches. I've just quick tangent, like Giannis, I watched the last 2 Bucks games where he was kind of like, I'm tired of losing. I'm just going to have to try harder, even though I try really hard every game. And he's basically a center now. He's like a 2021 version of a center, but the way he protects the rim and his confidence on both ends and just all the stuff he learned from the playoffs last year, it's just mesmerizing to watch him.
I think he's
at the peak of his powers.
I've got a take for you, actually. I'm going to run this by
you. Let's hear it.
And I'm thinking, I'm Giannis, and I'm saying, okay, this team with me, Drew, and Chris, this is the team for the next year or two, but I'm 26. I have a long career ahead of me. I got to start thinking like KD and LeBron. And what do those guys do? They try to find the other star who fits their game. They recruit them to their team, right? To me, if I'm Giannis, the guy I'm texting right now is Karl Anthony Towns.
Wow.
I'm telling him, Minnesota, this is over. You're never going to win there. You come here, I got you on defense, and you got me on offense. How is anybody ever going to guard Giannis at the rim and Kat 3-point line? That's not defensible. And then like your defensive issues, I got you. It's cool. And if I have those 2 7-footers together,
wow,
we're running through the league. That's my move if I'm Giannis right now. I'm just like,
well, they have
what
no picks left. How, just like for 3 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking, it's a long-term thing. Like, how long did LeBron talk to Anthony Davis, right?
True.
And how long did KD talk to Kyrie and James Harden? These things go, they take years. It's time to play the long game here.
Okay. KD should have picked different guys to talk to.
Well, that's the game at the highest level, right?
I tweeted last night my three favorite rookies were Mobley, Barnes, and Wagner.
That my was guy, one, Franz, two, he's been right killing now. It too.
So it leads to a bummer. And look, the Warriors are having an awesome season. I wish they had taken Wagner over Kuminga. It's actually like a shame. And we were saying that when we did our pre-draft special, like he was kind of the perfect Warriors pick because the hoops IQ and just his ability to fit in and play multiple positions. It's a shame they didn't take him on top of everything else that they have going. I really think he would have fit in nicely.
Well, you know what's crazy? You could run it back if they had just taken, I mean, and you know, obviously hindsight's 20/20, but we did say it beforehand too.
We did.
They could have just taken LaMelo and Franz. They could have went right. Steph, Clay, LaMelo, Franz, Green. That five, forget about it. It's over.
Yeah. It's too bad. It feels like they took Kuminga because they got seduced by the upside and really because he's probably, they thought, a better trade asset. You know, mm-hmm. if they're trying to make a move in January, February, who has more trade value? It seems like that was the reason for that pick. But Wagner would have been really nice. A couple other guys I really like that I mentioned on Twitter last night. Şengün has been as advertised. I don't know what he is, but he's something. He's definitely something. Things are going to happen with him. It's a shame he didn't end up on the Spurs. I wish they had taken him. I think he would have been a really fun Spur with their weird team. And Giddy, obviously, the ball just, I like the way the ball kind of moves when he's involved. He just seems like he'd be fun to play with. Those guys always make it. And then just random dudes. Dawson Mew on Chicago. I might have seen his best game, but he was impressive as like a possible 3-and-D guy. And then I like Herb Jones. But Herb Jones was like the one bright spot of the most terrible New Orleans season possible so far. But they got him, was he the 35th pick? He seems like an actual NBA player to me. And then obviously, you know, everybody else, I need more time. Duarte looks fine, but we're not surprising.
I mean, Duarte's old as me and you.
Right. Yeah, nobody's surprised by that. Suggs is in a weird spot only because with Cole Anthony, I think it's clearly Cole Anthony's team. I'll be interested to see. But that five-man lineup, somebody posted that yesterday about the Bamba, Carter, Wagner, Suggs, and Anthony is like the best five-man lineup by plus-minus right now. So I thought that was a good sign. But I like this draft. I like Davion Mitchell. I think we ended up with like 12 or 13 good ones, right?
Yeah, I mean, and what it really comes down to, it's all about, like I was saying, how these guys are being put on teams. And like with Giddy, what makes you really interested in that is like, I feel like you can make an SGA Giddy thing work, where SGA is the primary scorer and can guard a lot of positions. Giddy can do like a secondary passing thing while SGA gets buckets. I think that's what excites me is when you get combinations of players. I'd say with Suggs, I think it's possible. Like my comp for him was like, the ceiling was probably Drew Holiday. Like we all want him to be like a Damian Lillard type, but maybe his best scenario is kind of being the secondary combo guy who kind of does things and guards. And I think that might work in Orlando too. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah. It's a good draft. All right. I think we hit everything. Sharks, how you doing? People always want to know, how you feeling these days?
Good news is I finished chemo last week, which is like unbelievable. I can't even talk about it. So that's good. It's like, it's just been such a crazy journey for me. I was telling my wife, so me and my wife, we had our first kid right before the pandemic. And then the pandemic hits. And then as that's starting to ease up, I get cancer. And then I'm going through chemo for like 6 months. And so it's like in this 2-year journey where I'm like, and now I'm getting out of, I'm like, where the hell even am I? Like, what is going on?
Right.
So I think like things are going well. The one thing is it's really hard for me with what my situation is because I have like my cancer is a very rare kind where it's a lot of very, very small tumors. So the doctors are never going to be able to say, oh, like your cancer's gone. We took it out of your body. Life goes on. Like I'm always going to have like to deal with this and worry if it comes back. But all I can do now is just live the best life I can. And my doctor told me, he goes, you know, I don't know if it come back will come back. I am not the person who decides these things. And I said, yeah, you're not. There's not much I can do about it, but trust in God and just live the best life I can and watch some basketball, man.
Well, you've been incredible to work with, an incredible guy to get to know, and an inspiration, I think, to everybody. But it's been awesome to see how you've handled this the last year or so.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate all the support. Everyone's been awesome.
All right. Great to see you, Charks. Good. Next time we'll do this with Kyle. We'll do a little three-way. We can do a redraft or something.
We'll get him to talk about Poku.
Yeah. Maybe. Who is the last person at the Ringer who believes in Poku? I think even KOC has given up, right?
Kyle's fading on him too. But well, maybe Kyle and KOC. I'm not sure.
Well, Poku's going to have this second career in some country that will be getting clips of him 5 years from now. Be like, Poku, 48 in Russia last night. Here we go. All right. Good to see you, Sharks.
All right. Have a good one.
Für alle ein Fest zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Diese Woche Gourmet-Dessert-Törtchen. 6x30 Gramm für nur 2,89 Euro. Oder Gourmet-Frischkäse-Gipfel. 90 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke viele weitere festliche Angebote. Jetzt bei Aldi Nord. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
All right, he joins us every Thursday. Peter Schrager is here from Good Morning Football and from Fox Sports. We had another kind of lousy week last week. We lost 345,000 on million-dollar picks, but we're still up 579 for the season. This is going to be our biggest week of the year. I'm telling you now. You remember, like, are you old enough to remember Crazy Eddie?
Of course. He's going to sell you all of
Crazy
the stuff.
Eddie, yeah. This is the biggest sale I've had all year. This is going to be the biggest week we've had. I like a ton of games. There's some underdog stuff I like. It just, every once in a while, the schedule just comes your way with a bunch of things, a bunch of presents. It's like Santa Claus coming down the chimney. Before we do that, though, tell us your Odell stuff. He went to the Rams today. I don't want to spend too much time on this because he honestly has not been an impact player in 5 years. And I want to calm down on it. At the same time, he's better than Josh Reynolds. The Rams needed a third receiver. Like, this is a good thing for them.
It's so funny you say Josh Reynolds. So, Bill, when Josh Reynolds was released, I got from my sources in the Rams organization, like, all right, I think we're going to make a play for Josh Reynolds. And I'm like, all right, it's a solid signing. And then the last 48 hours, talk of Odell started coming up. But what I think is interesting is how they got Odell over there. You know, a couple years back when Odell was still with the Giants, the Rams were very much in the mix before he was traded to Cleveland. At the end of the day, Odell and McVay had seen each other out in LA. Like, they connected. There was no tampering. It was just one of those deals like, all right, this guy's cool. Someday I'll play for you. Ha ha ha. Like, one of that stuff, whatever. Turns out it never got very far because Cleveland offered first round pick. Like, the Rams weren't going to offer that. So this thing comes around and McVay got on the phone himself and he made a call to Odell and was basically like, what are you looking for? Because you can come here and be a part of a team and it's for 8 weeks or maybe more, whatever it is. You can A, have a great time with a bunch of these veterans. B, rehab your image, do whatever you want with that. And C, we're going to get you the rock. Like, don't worry. This isn't DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson is a different type of player than Odell Beckham. And what they're looking at is, let's go four wide. Let's get Cooper Kupp. Let's get Robert Woods. Let's get Van Jefferson. And let's get Odell out there. And they view Odell as a different type of receiver as DeSean Jackson or Josh Reynolds. And the pitch was basically like, come and join this ride. And you're going to enjoy this. You're going to be in LA. It'll be you and me. It'll be these guys. And then once McVay got going, then it became Jalen Ramsey FaceTiming him. It became Von Miller. Von Miller hasn't
played
down yet.
By the way, this was your basketball prediction. You said this was the February buyout Brooklyn Nets move.
This was it. Going all in. This is the Brooklyn Nets going out and getting LaMarcus Aldridge when they already just got Blake Griffin. Like, this is what it was. And the last point that I love, and this comes from someone else other than McVay, but it's Jalen Ramsey's FaceTiming him. And apparently Odell asks Jalen, like, hey, I just want to make sure. Do you think the rest of the wide receivers are going to be cool? I don't want to upset an apple cart. Like, if I'm coming in, trust me, I'm coming in. So Jalen Ramsey brings his phone with Odell on FaceTime and brings it into the wide receivers room and basically faces it at them. And is like, are you guys cool with Odell? And they're all like, yeah, let's go. Like, let's bring him in. So Odell's coming. And like the fact that like Von Miller's recruiting him and is like, dude, we need you. Like, they're all in. And it's one of these deals where We talked about last week with Von Miller, but the other veterans feed off it. And for this one, they're paying him basically what they were going to pay DeSean Jackson. It's a rental. If it works out and they can re-sign him, that's great. If not, let's see where it goes. But they don't view this as, oh my God, here comes Odell Beckham. He's going to throw Matt Stafford under the bus and like he did to Baker or to Eli. Like, this is a different deal right here. It's a bunch of veterans who all very much acknowledge that this is the best shot I have at winning a Super Bowl. And we're all in for this one season.
Well, they can also cut him if it doesn't work out.
Exactly right.
It's not a lot of money going on here. I was wondering, what do you think he was holding out for? Because I thought, I didn't know if it was attention or he didn't find the right team or it seemed like he was milking it. At one point I was thinking, is he waiting until Sunday's games to see who's in the playoff picture? There's so many things in motion on Sunday and Monday for the playoffs that we're really going to have by Tuesday, we're really going to have a feeling for the playoff picture. I was wondering, was he looking at that? What do you think?
I think he's always wanted to play in LA. He's always wanted to play for McVay. And, right out of the gates, and you've got good NFL reporters, but you heard the teams, Packers, Chiefs, Patriots, Saints, who I can tell you, Saints actually tried trading for him before the trade deadline. Like they were actually, but it was, do you want to be the number one on the New Orleans Saints and get 30 receptions and maybe, or do you want to be here and like play in the playoffs and maybe win a Super Bowl and you can still be yourself and do the whole
and
thing.
And be in a giant city where you can just disappear and be a celebrity.
Yes. And be and not Odell Beckham in New Orleans where, he
grew
up in Louisiana or Kansas City. The last point that was made to him, which I loved, was basically the pitch that the Rams made where it's like, since you went to LSU, you've never gotten to choose where you could play. Like this is the first time ever you can choose. He's never been a free agent. He's never had the opportunity to do that. So they really put it to him. They're like, would you choose to play anywhere else than here? Like, it's up to you. What do you want? And they play it to his, because the one thing with Odell, and I covered him when he was at the Giants, I've gotten to know a lot of people, like teammates love him. Aside from the situations with Baker and Eli, which are major, like he's never not practiced
the only two quarterbacks he's had.
He's actually thrown both his quarterbacks under a bus.
Other than that.
The confidence is that like the rest of the team, they all look at him. He works hard. He's not an a-hole. And like whatever went down with his
seemed like an a-hole.
Yeah, look, I guess maybe I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth because, when you do a sit down with Josina Anderson and Lil Wayne and say, Eli can't get you the ball in week 7, that's actually not great teammate stuff. But they're optimistic that this
is But this is a football thing. We've seen this with receivers when they feel like either the supporting cast or the QB isn't to their standards.
Yeah.
There's a history of meltdowns with this. I think it's a good risk for them. I really think they needed a third receiver. And you think of like the Madden quality they have now where it's like just the four wide receiver Madden play. That's just like, do I have four receivers? Do I have to illegally trade for somebody so I can stack my team as I'm trying to win a title in Madden?
You're spot on.
This is kind of what they did.
It's 10 personnel. It's like, let's just go. Let's do it.
Spread it out. Helps the running game. I think it's going to be a hard team to coach would be... The one thing I would say, I know McVay was your co-host once upon a time, but you have these big personalities.
Yeah.
You're basically running a movie set that has 20 big actors on it and everybody's going to want their moment. And we saw it a couple weeks ago. I thought they lost their composure a little bit, or was it last week? I can't remember.
Last week.
One of those games last week. Yeah. They lost their composure and Jalen Ramsey specifically. I don't know.
The everyone wants to say, oh, this could be like the dream team Eagles, right? And I would counter, I think it feels more like the 95 Niners when it was like free agency just started and Deion's coming and Ken Norton's coming and Charles Haley's coming. And it's like, oh, we've already got Ricky Waters and bar none Floyd. Like, let's add another guy. And it was just veteran. And, the circle on that is that McVay's grandfather was the GM of that team. And it was like, talent could be put together. It will not, if these guys are all committed to the cause, we can do it. I hear what you're saying. I hated those Gary Marshall, like Valentine's Day movies and New Year's Day and all those things where it was just like, here's Seth Meyers and 11 other stars.
It's a Gary Marshall movie. I still think Tampa is the team to beat. We have a couple things that tie into this Rams thing. There's a couple teams this week, and this is a small segue into $1 million picks, but not really. There's a couple teams this week that are at the fork in the road point of the season.
Oh, yeah.
It's kitchen sink time.
Do you like the kitchen Niners, sink time?
I think the Niners are a kitchen sink team.
Okay.
I think this Raiders-Chiefs game is a kitchen sink game on
Monster
both sides.
Game. monster game.
I think we should, and Vikings Chargers, I think for the Vikings is the kitchen sink game. The Agreed. Vikings are still in it. So in let's it. Talk about these three because Raiders Chiefs, just a multi-year history now of the Raiders getting up for these games where usually the Chiefs had way more talent. This time around, the Chiefs do not have more talent.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're 17th at DVOA. The Vegas is 21st. I think eye test Vegas is probably slightly better. But I was trying to look. I was trying to think of other teams we've had where we just kind of wait for the light bulb to go on and it just never happens, right? Just in recent history.
Good point. Because last year, the Bucs, it did happen, right?
The Bucs, it did happen.
It happened, yeah.
So here's a couple. The Colts in 2010.
Okay.
After they make the Super Bowl. It's kind of the last Manning year. He gets hurt the year after. Colts in 2010 start 6-6.
Okay.
We're waiting. What is this? They're not covering. What's going on? Going a little 4-game winning streak near the end.
Chargers wild
Bad
card
Bad teams
round?
Lose to the Jets in the wild card.
Jets in the wild card round.
But it had, the whole season had kind of an odor to it. And mm-hmm. you kind of knew by week 8, week 9. 2012 Saints, the Bounty Gate year when Peyton suspended. They started at 0-4.
Yep. Rallied.
Is it going to come on? They have so much talent. Well, I can't. Nope. Didn't happen. They finished 7-9. 2014 Niners, after the Super Bowl, they still have Kaepernick. Start out 4-2. Doesn't feel right. Finish 8-8.
Okay.
2019 Pats. This is the weirdest one. They start out 8-0. Soft schedule. Great
Remember
defense.
That.
They finished 12-5. They go 4-5 over their last nine. And there was this point during it where people are looking at each other going, is this team good? Wait a second. Are we just doing past performance?
Yeah. And do you remember
with assessing that they're good? And then the Steelers last year.
They beat the Bills on a Saturday night. Everyone's like, all right, they're back.
They're back. We wanted it so bad. But
and then they lost week 17 to the Dolphins. You're like, wait, what? And then they lost in the playoffs.
Track record was there. And the Steelers is the last one. The Steelers started out great, 11-0.
Yeah.
But then like we hit that week 15, 16, 17 mark and we're all looking at each other and we're going, this is not happening.
It's
not happening.
Yeah.
I feel like the Chiefs have hit that point.
I know.
And I want to bet against them accordingly. They're 5-4. Their last two games, they should have lost the Giants game. That was stupid. And then last week, they get Jordan Love, who they just decide, we're just going to blitz every play. They only score 13 points against the Packers.
I know.
And it's a whole gimmick that they get by. So they're 5-4. I think it's really deceiving. I think the Raiders can win this game. It's in Vegas, which I don't care because home field advantage has been kind of garbage all over the place this year. But I just, you would pencil this in and think, oh, Chiefs, easy. Not even positive why they're favored in this game. I feel like we're getting points. I think this should be a pick 'em.
I think the Raiders last week was a real reason for concern. You look at that team, they came out flat against the Giants. We know what they've been through these last few weeks. It looked like they were an exhausted team, both physically and emotionally. And Henry Ruggs is not coming back. And Henry Ruggs was the one player that they absolutely went to against Kansas City in Arrowhead last year. He had those huge plays and he was their speed threat. So he's not coming back. So you say, okay, well, he shouldn't be coming back. All right, well, we've got Zay Jones. We've got Bryan Edwards, who's a big body. We've got Hunter Renfrow, who's an underneath guy. They had nothing going on last week. And there were
no deep anything.
Again.
Yeah, and some turnovers.
So it's like, if this is a shootout, I don't know, based on what we saw last week and based on what personnel they have on the field. Like, Waller's great, and we can get to all these other wide receivers and Foster Moreau and whatever, but I don't know, man. That was a big loss. And I think the combination of the actual player not being there, but then the psychological and the emotional and the just the wear of this season on this team, I'd find it hard to bet for the Raiders. I would bet against the Chiefs, no problem. But to bet for the Raiders is hard for me right now.
I think last week you throw out because of the Ruggs thing.
Okay.
It had just happened. It was yet another thing they have to deal with in a season of that. And I think now, I like the history of these Raiders-Chiefs games. I also like the fact that the Chiefs' offensive line is really banged up now.
Yeah, there are injuries.
There's injuries all over the place, and you think that's one of the things the Raiders can do is rush the passer. Now, on the other side, the Chiefs' D-line's getting a little healthy, but this feels like a pick-em game. The reason I'm looking at it is I just feel like I'm getting 2.5 points with the Raiders.
Okay, let's
go
Raiders.
And I'm potentially getting a plus 124. Let's mark it down.
Okay,
because this is a long-term anti-Chiefs play that we have to look at. I haven't liked anything that's come out of Kansas City. It's like they're under siege, basically, and it's a take quake. It's the Chiefs. Under siege.
Dude, 5 days.
Did you
a
feel
week.
Good about any of the stuff no. that they said? No, we're fine. We've got this. They're out there trying to get Odell. They're trying to figure out who their second receiver is, how to unlock Kelsey. They want Clyde Edwards-Helaire to come back so they have a better running game. Is he going to help their running game? Give me a break.
So many things to look at. Like last week, Hardman drops that third down pass. You're like, gosh, like if you just catch that, like, and then.
But that's Kelsey, who he is.
Kelsey drops that pass. It's so unlikely. And then on 3rd and 10, and everything going, like, here it is, all the marbles. Mahomes hits Tyreek for about 15. They get the first down. They put the game on ice. And then you see Mahomes like pumping his fist and like fired up. And like, there's a glimmer. There's such a glimmer where you're like, oh my God, that's the team. Those are the guys. And yet it's so bad to beat that Packers team by just 6 points at home. Jordan Love was so.
I feel like that was a bad
underwhelming.
Win. Yeah,
so
that was a bad win.
I know.
I heard Solak talk about this with Sharp yesterday and it triggered and I went and I looked at it because he was saying how he didn't think like Kelsey looked the same this year.
He doesn't.
Now, the stats don't back that up, but I feel the exact same way eye test wise. He doesn't seem like a lock. And like in the old days, it's like we need 12, go to Kelsey, 3rd and 8, Kelsey. And I went back and I looked at just targets.
Okay.
So guys that have had tight ends that have had 115 plus targets. And you think like, oh, Kelsey's going to do this forever. He's had 5 straight years where he's had 115 targets or more. I just picked 115 because it was able to whittle away some guys. Gonzalez had 10 years over his career where he had 115 targets. Now,
wow.
He was really a wide receiver.
He was awesome, but yeah.
Yeah, he was awesome. But yeah, if you think of him more in a wide receiver context, that makes more sense. Witten had 7, Kelsey had 5, Jimmy Graham 4, Kellen Winslow 4, Gates 3, Gronk 3, Olsen and Shockey 3. That's it for 115 target seasons. I saw this happen with Coates and I saw this happen with Gronk, where these tight ends that over and over it's 8, 10, 12, 13 chances a game. It's a shelf life. It's not different than running backs. I don't feel like he's 100% there. Like with Ben Coates, you could see it. Like overnight, he just lost half a step.
Was a first team all pro.
He was incredible.
He was amazing.
And then all of a sudden, he wasn't as amazing because I think that's one of the hardest. Gronk, same thing. He had a bunch of injuries. I don't feel like Kelsey's there yet, but I'm going to really watch for it this week.
Because it's something worth following because, you know, here's the other part. You know, Mahomes is amazing. You're waiting for it to click, but it doesn't seem like he's reading the coverages as well as some of the other best quarterbacks in the NFL. And he always had Kelsey as that security blanket. If Kelsey's having drops and fumbles.
If he's 80% Kelsey, some of this makes sense, right? If Reed's not on it like he used to be, teams are taking away Tyreek. They can't really run the ball. And none of their other receivers have stepped up, I don't think.
Yeah.
Not one guy.
We had LeSean McCoy on Good Morning Football, who is,
he's
by the way,
good.
Awesome.
Yeah, I like LeSean McCoy. Just add him to the cast.
I know. He was great. And he
sign
was
him,
like,
lock him down.
We all were very positive with Shady's performance.
He's good.
And what he was saying about that Kansas City offense, he's like, never count out Tyreek and Kelsey. I'm like, but what if Kelsey's not? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, is Hardman going to step up all of a sudden? Is Robinson suddenly in year 5 going to be that guy? And Shady's kind of shrugging. He's like, those are good dudes, but you know, I was there for a year and it's going to come down to Kelsey and Hill. And if Kelsey's not Kelsey, they're not the Chiefs.
He's in his 30s and he's got a lot of miles on him. So now it's, you know, we've talked over and over again about performance and athletes and how you can extend it, but the tight end position is pretty unforgiving. All right. So that's one team. Niners, Rams. I'm on the fence for whether we should include them. The Rams have the toughest schedule the rest of the way.
Yep.
Tampa Bay has the second easiest schedule the rest of the way. And I just think Tampa is going to win that conference. Their offensive line last week, I thought, got just demolished by Tennessee.
Jeffrey
Simmons.
It was
a demolition. Stafford doesn't seem healthy to me. It seems like he's at the nursing 4 different injury stage. Yeah. That part makes me nervous. Kitchen sink game for the Niners. And then it's weird. The Niners, who I don't really like that much, but they're 9th in DVOA somehow. The nerds like them for some reason. They've played the 4th hardest schedule so far. And this is a referendum game. This is a game now. Like, we ran a piece, Solak wrote a piece on The Ringer this week about how Shanahan, the personnel guy, has kind of crippled Shanahan, the coach. which is a great angle and pretty true. But this is one of those, like, if you get blown out in this game and your season's, that's it, what do you do? Like, do you really have to start looking at, is this deeper than just we haven't had talent and we had some injuries the last couple of years? Like, does this whole philosophy work? So that's why I think it's a kitchen sink game for them.
Yeah. The Niners, the craziest stat I have, and it's one that I've been adding to every time they do it. They have lost their last 8 home games. Now, 3 of those were played in Arizona.
In the Silicon Elysium.
They have not won a home game since the NFC Championship game against the Packers. And that feels like it was pre-pandemic. It was so long ago. Oh my God.
Is that true?
Like, yes. And it's this weird thing where it's like that crowd who loves their Niners. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But they turn on that team very quickly if things don't go wrong. And it's a very, I know you said you went to a wrestling event there once, but have you been to a game there? It's not necessarily like this. Candlestick was such a home field advantage. This thing isn't. And this team does not play well there. So they were grilling Shanahan all week. Like, is it something about the pregame routine? And he was very curt with reporters, as he is wont to be sometimes. But he was like, no, we do the same thing every time. It's not about pregame thing. We stay at the hotel because that's what we do. Like, what do you do when your team just cannot perform at home? It's a very odd situation. It's not like it's the opposing fans that are in the building. It's diehard Niners fans. They're just frustrated.
Well, I think Kittle's playing this week.
Yeah.
Elijah Mitchell seems like he's
should be fine.
Healthier.
McClinchy's out, who is a really good tackle.
McClinchy's out. That's a bad one. This feels like the game where, like, Deebo Samuel throws a pass.
Yeah, like, let's break.
And there's a reverse on the punt, and you're just doing everything you can in this
game.
Well,
you mentioned the personnel. It's like, you know, Brandon Ayuk, not only was he a first-round pick, but, like, Shanahan, with a kind of chest puffed out, is like, we had him number one on our list.
Yeah.
He was our number one wide receiver, and that's a draft with Justin Jefferson, and it's a draft with, obviously, you know, you've got all the, you know, Judy and CeeDee Lamb, and he's like, no, Brandon Ayuk's our number one guy. Brandon Ayuk is barely on the field, and when he is, seems like he's hurting the team. Then there's, you go right down to this quarterback situation where every week Mac Jones seems to be putting more and more together, and they're still in purgatory with Jimmy or a kid who's not ready yet when everyone thought they were going to be all in this season.
Fields had some moments on
Fields
Monday night.
Awesome, huh? Second half?
Turns out maybe producing on the big stage might matter sometimes. The other kitchen sink team we have is the Vikings. So I liked them more before this really ugly Dalvin Cook saga, which I'm sure is going to take a few weeks to untangle. It seems like he's playing. But you can run on the Chargers. Can run till the cows come home.
Bill, what are we talking? We lost on them again last week. We had them in the underdog parlay, and they were up by 14 points.
They hurt us. They hurt our feelings.
I don't know how you could.
Chargers
back them
have
again.
injuries in the secondary.
Okay.
Teams have just figured out how to take out Mike Williams completely.
Yep, he
6 catches last 3 games.
He's done
the Patriots
are
just like, you're not beating us, and I'm not sure the Chargers are good because I didn't think the Pats played well. And I still feel like they could have won by 20 if a couple good things. I mean, they both running backs got concussed.
Yeah.
You know, it turned out they needed a pick six at some point in that game. But they won last week. It
was
the Chargers.
Great win for them, though.
Great win. It didn't blow my socks off, though.
I know, but 24-24, 6 minutes left, and Herbert has the ball, and they go and they convert 2 different fourth down conversion. Like,
right.
They bleed it. Like, it's cool win. I'll say this. Teams can run all over the Chargers. And the one thing that Minnesota can do, whether it's Cook and it's Madison, they get the run game going. You're right. Kitchen sink game times 100, but last week was a kitchen sink game. And, you know, Kirk Cousins has this great drive with 40 seconds left to tie the game. And they found a way to go to overtime and all this stuff, and they still lose.
They had the ball in overtime.
They got
the
ball back on the Anthony Barr pick and then have the most... I think you tweeted out the drive summary.
Yeah, it was three plays for 1 yard. Look, the Chargers were 4-1. They got killed by the Baltimore. They had a bye week. They lose to the Pats in a game that I didn't feel like was even as close as the score. And then they barely beat Philly, who I just don't think is good. And we're going to get to them in a split second, but I don't think the Chargers are good. You go back, they beat Dallas, they lose to Dallas by 3. They beat the Chiefs, and we're all excited about that. They win a shootout against the Browns, which was just a weird win.
Yeah.
I don't think, I'm just off on them, and I think Minnesota can beat them. I don't trust Minnesota. I'd rather do the plus 3 than put them in an underdog thing. But quickly on Philly, and then we'll take a break. Because they're another team that I have in here. The Broncos are -2.5 against the Eagles.
Mm.
They completely shut down Dallas's receivers last week. Now, Surtain is out, which is a bummer.
It's a bummer. He's been good.
But there's two things. I think they're going to have the ball this entire game, Denver.
Like they
so
did
the
last
Javonte, week. Javonte Williams, who they've been carefully...
Yeah.
I have him on every fantasy team. So
as
I've been obviously I'm as focused as possible on this. But they finally, he got on Kyle Brandt's angry runs.
Yep.
He got 17 carries last week, but the history of rookie running back, second half of the year, they start unleashing him. We saw Jonathan Taylor was a good example of that. Denver has completed almost 70% of their passes. Mm. Well, it's like, all right, that's a dumb stat. But that's what Bridgewater does, right? He moves the ball.
Sure.
Short passes, accurate. They're second in the league just in completion accuracy. Philly's last defensively. Their teams are 75.5% completion percentage against Philly. Guys are just open the whole game. I just think this game where Denver has the ball for 40 minutes and that's it. And whatever. I don't think Philly's good. They're playing with $35 million less on the cap. So I like Broncos -2.5 a lot.
You know, I watched that game. Obviously, you did too. And it was from go. It was like every time you turned it on, they had the ball. And then they didn't just
dominated them.
Just pounding the ball. So it wasn't only Javonte. It was Melvin Gordon. And they're running behind Cushenberry and Quinn Miners, the rookie. And it was like, they were beating the crap out of teams. And they did that the last week against Washington, too. It's funny, like Von Miller was having a good season for them before the ankle injury. But it almost feels like something clicked. Like once they traded Von, like the nobody believes in us card suddenly like checked in with the entire locker room. Because they had lost 4 in a row. I'd written them off. I'm like, they beat terrible teams. They lose to good teams. I don't think Philly's good either. I think Denver's really, really sound. They don't make mistakes. Fangio has a good defense no matter who's out there.
And it's in Denver, which is one of the few places we have a home field advantage. Philly's 2-6 in their last 8. The two wins where they beat Carolina by 3. No McCaffrey. And then they killed Detroit. Congratulations. Detroit's 0-8. That's it. Those are their only wins. I don't get why this line isn't higher, but I'm not gonna ask questions. All right, we're gonna take a break and talk about the other two games. I like. Let's talk Pats Browns. Pats -1.5. We've been riding the Patriots. I don't think Harris is gonna play. I think Ramondre will play. I think we'll see some JJ Taylor and some Brandon Bolden. Look, the Browns. It's a team that if they can make a couple big plays, it feels a little different than if Baker has to go down the field on you. And I think Belichick is just going to make sure that Baker slowly, methodically has to go down the field. He knows what to do. Keep hitting Baker. Keep knocking him around. Keep trying to put them in 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6. We're not going to have Chubb in this game, which it doesn't sound like.
Well, if there's a chance tomorrow and Saturday or Sunday,
I'm going to bank on no Chubb.
Okay.
I just think they're going to beat them. I'm in on this Pats team. I'm in on the front 7. I think it's a good team.
Yeah.
And I think to get less than a field goal at home against the Browns, I'm taking it.
Couple questions. Who do you think has more at stake in this game? Mac or Baker?
I think the Patriots have more at stake in this game because they have to play Atlanta on Thursday night.
Yep.
So
and they've got Buffalo twice.
This is the biggest 120 hours of the season for them because you figure best case scenario, they split the Buffalo games, but they're 5-4. They could legitimately be 5-6 in 120 hours.
You're right.
So this is can't fuck around with the Browns. I think they can run on them. I think they can control the ball and move the ball. The Garrett part scares me. Like there's no question.
He's amazing.
Garrett
did you hear
hit the
Belichick,
shit out of Mac Jones. Yeah.
You hear Belichick talking about him?
Yeah.
Belichick was talking about Garrett as if it was LT. Like that's how he was talking about him. And I think he's being honest with that. That's the big X factor. And I think Trent Brown might be coming back. That's the word. And that like that helps.
There's some decent Isaiah Wynn stuff. Evan Lazar, who is a good Pats beat writer, was tweeting out some Isaiah Wynn numbers this week. And I was like, all right.
Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah, I was like, all right. Only one sack allowed. Might not have been his fault. I'm feeling good. But I think this is a Baker game. I think this is a Baker versus Belichick game. And I think Belichick will figure out how to basically defang Baker in this game. Yeah. I think Baker is a limited quarterback.
You know, back in 2018, and I reported it for NFL Network on the draft, and everyone was like, it was a big story at the time. But I'm like, it was the day after, but Baker went one, so it was whatever. But if Baker had slipped out of one, I know that the Patriots were very interested in moving up with Brady on the roster to go get Baker. So they had this great feeling of respect for him. I wonder if Baker elevates his game on this stage with everyone wondering about his future. Because here's the deal. Baker, if they lose, they're 5-5. They'll figure it out, whatever. Maybe they're a wild card, maybe they're not. Like, Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield, to me, were the two most interesting quarterbacks going into the season because there's these looming contracts. And it's like, what do you pay Lamar Jackson, who, you know, if we don't pay him, like, what's his value? Lamar's been amazing. Baker, can Baker Mayfield demand $35 million this offseason?
No, it's not happening.
So what do you do if you're Cleveland? Do you just say, we'll go for a fifth year and we'll ride this out? Like, if he wins these type of games, though, he can make a real argument for himself that, like, yeah, my stats aren't the best and my physical stature is not Josh Allen or Lamar, but, like, I win those games. I get them done for you. Going into New England?
I would tell him to settle down if he gave me that argument. How many times do you think he's thrown for 250 yards this season?
Against the Chargers, maybe?
Twice.
Chargers and Cardinals? I think
there's certain guys in the league that when the team is up early and they're playing with a lead, it's completely different to have them as the QB. Then, like, everything falls into place for them. If it's a nail-biter game, if it's a dogfight, if it's, we're down 7, if the QB actually has to make some plays, I'm sorry, but Baker's playing with one arm. And the Pats are going to hit the shit out of him. Their front seven's really good.
And like,
they're going to hit the shit out of him in this game.
Nick Chubb's one of the top 10 players in the league.
I can't imagine he's playing. He legitimately had COVID. It's not like he
has COVID. Yeah,
He had COVID.
So the rule is, if he can have two straight negative tests and has no symptoms, he can play. Now, you know, the honor code on the symptoms part, but if he has two straight negative tests, he can play, and he's got a few days for that. So, but he's that good. And De'Ernest Johnson's been fine as a number two, but
I like him. He's all right.
Felton's out because of COVID, Chubb, and then obviously Hunt. So it's like, all right, Baker, you might have to go win this game on your own on offense.
Jarvis, you're just not catching anything today. Belichick will take him out. They won't let Peoples Jones go deep. You don't get to go deep in this game. And then they're going to hit the shit out of Baker. And I think the defense wins this game. I like the Pats.
How about the Pats being red hot with everyone crapping all over us, dude? Isn't it great?
We'll have the last laugh. Last game. The Falcons, +9 against the Cowboys. Explain this one to me.
Yeah.
Cowboys, they lose Gregory this week.
Yeah.
They've already lost to Marcus Lawrence. Uh-huh. They had two pass rushers on the entire team. Last week, part of the problem with that Broncos game was they had no pass rush at all. Like, Bridgewater had time. They were running the ball down their throats. And I think that defense, which was able to get some turnovers in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, which always kind of throw it off. But the longer we're going with this team, defense just isn't that good. And I think the Dan Quinn stuff, teams, whatever, they obviously had some game tape to look at. Now, I really like their offense, but, you know, Matt Ryan's been pretty good the last few weeks. They can move the ball.
I'm looking at
that +9. I'm looking at the, even if it's like, all right, Dallas is up 14 last 2 minutes, I can get a cheap touchdown. I think they can hang around in this game, though, and I like the +9.
I think they can win this game.
Yeah, I do too.
I honestly do. And you mentioned the defensive injuries. You know, Micah Parsons had a big game last week, but a lot of that was 2.5 sacks and like 11 tackles. But in a game where you lose by 30 points, it's not, you know, it's hard to hang your hat on that.
Yeah, I guess Parsons is there still the pass rusher. Yeah,
he's so good.
So they had three pass rushers. They're down to one. I'm sorry, Dallas fans.
It's all right. So the Dan Quinn piece is interesting because obviously he's a defensive coordinator, but what team knows Dan Quinn better than the Atlanta Falcons?
Right.
Right. So in comes Matt Ryan, who's looking at the Dan Quinn defense, which, okay, it's this for inferior players than what I was against in Atlanta. He's like, I saw this every single practice for years.
Yeah.
There's a weird stat. There's never been a head coach who took a team to the Super Bowl play against that team who's been a defensive coordinator. So he's had offensive coordinators come back and play the team, but there's never been a defensive coordinator. I think, I don't know, maybe I'm being Pollyanna on this and like Matt Ryan is, but I feel like he's a really cerebral quarterback, knows that defense inside and out, knows that scheme. And I think he could pick it apart. And guess what? Patterson is really good.
It's one of the weirdest later career resurgences I can remember. It's a little like Julius Randle-ish.
That's it, with the Knicks, you're right.
But even like if Julius Randle did this 3 years from now, not like last year, you
he's
know,
or ninth,
you're going...
Ninth yeah. year in the league. And he's like, and he's also like a little chirpy. Like they interviewed him, James Palmer from the NFL Network interviewed him after the game. And he's like, ooh, there's no sweeter feeling and there's no better sound than a silent Superdome. And you're like, whoa,
Cordero, yeah, where'd you come from?
9 years in, he's their go-to guy. Pitts is fine. Gage is fine. They don't have Ridley for now. We'll see what happens with Ridley. But like this team is can move the ball on offense. And Matt Ryan is a veteran quarterback who knows that defense. I might take them outright. I like it.
And who's covering Pitts on the Cowboys?
I don't know.
I like that game, but I like it more if we can push the, yeah. we can nudge the Falcons up to 10.5.
Come on, let's go.
Minus 130, which means we would have to put them with a big favorite to try to even out the money, which we like to do from time to time. We could do Falcons to plus 10.5 with Bucks just to win minus 450.
Love it.
That's plus 116. Or we could do Falcons plus 10.5 with Cards minus 500. That's plus 112. I'm more partial to the Bucks. I say that knowing that there's some receiver stuff. Now, this is where I give you my fantasy sleeper for this weekend because I picked him up in two leagues. I think it's Tyler Johnson week.
Oh,
Kyle, turn the camera on.
Let's go.
It's Tyler Johnson week. Here we go. I think Brady likes him. I've seen him make good plays in
two
big
of the clutchest
spots.
Plays last year against the Saints. Third and like, eight, they go to Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, we don't have Chris Godwin. I think they're okay. I think Tyler Johnson can do a Chris Godwin impersonation. And I think Brady sniffs it. He's very aware of what their schedule is, what's going on with the Rams, the Rodgers stuff, MVP possibilities. I think they run the slate. I don't think they lose again. I think this is it, and it starts this week.
They did it last year. They went on their bye. They came out. They beat Minnesota in kind of a slugfest, and then they never lost a single game after the bye.
This is usually when he gets going, too. So plus 116 for that combo.
I also would say Washington's defense, it's amazing. They're last in the league in pass defense. Apparently, Chase Young has been not the greatest, guy to be wearing the C on his jersey this year as far as like leadership of the defensive unit. There's a disconnect between the defensive coordinator, Del Rio, and the players. I think that this is the perfect game for Tampa Bay. They come out there and Tyler Johnson, Cyril Grayson, who had a big touchdown 2 weeks ago against the Saints. Like, there's going to be some unlikely names, but Brady's got it. I trust Brady.
There's a world... Also, with the Falcons, where they could be 6-4 in 120 hours.
Oh, yeah. They beat those two.
Or in a week. They could upset with the Cowboys. Oh, my God. Let's go to Dallas, where Atlanta scored again. And then all of a sudden, they're beating the Pats 4 days later. Or I could see them being 4-6
yeah, I mean,
in a week. And we're
NFL.
Like, hey, remember when we thought the Falcons
remember
might
we
make
did the
playoffs?
Whole Falcons spiel? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Underdog parlays. Falcons are plus 320. 49ers are plus 162. The Raiders are plus 124 against the Chiefs. And the Seahawks, who we have not mentioned, who I think we should stay away from, are plus 154.
I just don't know what Rodgers' status is.
So I think
is.
We cross them off. We'll wipe them out. So we could do Falcons, Raiders, plus 840.
Wow.
And I have good news for you. FanDuel is going to boost that over 10-1 for us. Falcons, Raiders, 10-1. Both have to win.
Were the FanDuel people happy that we lost at the end with the Ravens beating?
I think they were. I think they were relieved. We came so close. We were up 10 in both games, second half.
We had the Falcons, and then we're waiting for the Vikings. They get the ball back, and it's like, just get to field goal range. They didn't even give our guy Greg Joseph a chance.
Raiders, Vikings is plus 455. Both have to win. Those are two small dogs. Bum mentioned that. I'm going to throw this at you. Better say that.
Give me something crazy, Bill.
Falcons.
Yeah.
Vikings.
Yeah.
Raiders.
Yes.
Plus 2,223. Bet 100, bet 100, you win $2,200 basically. 22 to 1 odds, a little higher. Falcons, Vikings, Raiders. It's the mega dog parlay.
This is the
we
MDP.
Haven't done one of those. We could put a little 10K flyer on it.
Oh my God, I love MDP, the mega dog parlay.
The mega dog parlay. We're looking for, FanDuel asked me if we could figure out a way to nickname Underdog Parlay of the Week. Because on the on their little boost site, because they love the boost, but call it like the mega dog or whatever. So if anybody has any suggestions, send it to Schrager's Twitter replies.
All to my Twitter. Loves it. I check it all day.
And then you can yell at him for saying let's go too much. That's the other thing. Although you cut back. This is your lowest let's go rate you've had
toned
in a while.
It down. I don't kiss your ass on the Patriots. I toned it down. Let's just go. Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're taking the Patriots again. By the way, two things on the Patriots. 10th in DVOA last 5 weeks.
Okay.
Plus 60 point differential for the season. Evil Mac Jones.
I know. What's the twisting of
the evil Mac Jones.
What'd you make of it?
Wrestling heel Mac Jones. I think he needed an identity. He was like just the guy who was
does that
pretty steady.
Himself to you guys, like the Patriots fans?
I loved it. I loved
it. Did you? You loved it?
I love that Brian Burns wanted an apology. You're a fucking football player. You knocked out two of our running backs. Are you going to apologize to them?
Burns was like, it's crazy. I look at the NBA and like the Jokic's, like I read that like Jokic's brothers are like going to a game.
Going to Miami.
That's amazing.
I thought he just didn't want Burns to get the fumble, so he grabbed his leg.
I don't know his intentions. I know it only adds to the myth of the evil empire. Oh, gosh.
I love it.
He
needed it. Of
course you're leaning into it.
The heel, Mac Jones. All right, when we come back, we're going to give you our $1 million picks for week 10.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mundt reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam. Und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Hey, before we do $1 million picks, I read something about home field advantage this year. I remember when I was, even before Grantland, I'm going to say 2008, 2009 for ESPN, I wrote a big piece about home field advantage was starting to change. Because when I was growing up, the home team would win like 70% of the time, 75% of the time. It was a lot. There was a real home field advantage. It started to shift in the mid-2000s. And I spent like 3 days working on this piece. I was looking at records and coming up with all these theories, like whether it was people just like being at home with their TVs or they didn't want to be out and had all these theories. And home field shifted a little bit and then it kind of stabilized.
Now it's even, right? If anything, I think road wins more than home.
It's unbelievable. Last year, 2020, so COVID, road teams won more than home teams. I'm not talking about covering the spread. I'm talking about winning.
That's crazy.
It started to happen in 2019. The home teams were 132 and 123 and 1. So they were only 9 games over 500. This is pre-COVID.
Yeah.
By far the worst record we've had. This year, after Sunday's games, home teams were 65 and 70. And then Pittsburgh won at home. So there were six. So now it's 66 and 70. We're taping this before we see who wins the Miami
Dolphins
game. So home teams, just to win, are under 500.
So weird.
And what's happening, I did some research on it. The old rule of you get 3 points if you're home, Vegas has basically thrown that out. And I think that's kind of thrown off my internal calibration. Now it's like 1 to 1.5 points for being home.
It's really interesting.
So like the Broncos in the old days is just like, oh, there's Broncos 3.5. Now it's Broncos 2.5.
Huh.
because they don't really feel like home. It doesn't even matter where the game's being played. So I tried to factor that into some of these picks this week, but here we go. The million-dollar picks. Oh, wait, before we do this, we didn't talk about Tennessee and the Saints. Tennessee's favored by 3 against the Saints. I wanted to take the Titans. Kamara might not play. Who knows? Trevor Siemian looks too easy. It's fishy. There's a fishiness to that line. Titans playing great. Kicked the Rams' ass last week. Defense looking awesome. They figured out how to play with Derrick Henry. Something scares me about it. I'm staying away. I don't too know. I this is a Michael Conrad, let's be careful out there game. I'm staying away.
You too mentioned
fishy.
It.
Too easy.
You mentioned it, though. Like, is it fishy when your defense is just awesome? Because that's the one thing I would say. Like, Jeffrey Simmons and Danico Autry and Kevin Byard playing like a defensive player. Like, the offense, you could say, but their defense is really good. Don't you think their defense could just dominate that Saints depleted offense? There and
very possibly. I'm staying away.
Okay.
I don't know why the line's not 3.5 or 4. I can't figure it out. Because this is Trevor Siemian, injured Kamara. Michael Thomas is never coming back, apparently. And I just think it seems like the Titans, they seem so easy. Anyway, staying away. Here we go. The million-dollar picks for week 10. We are up 579,000 for the season. We've had 2 losing weeks in a row. Schrager, we've lost almost $1 million the last 3 weeks.
It hurts.
And we're going to win all of it back this week. We're opening up a little bit.
Let's go.
Patriots, -1.5 against the Browns. Bill Belichick unlocking Baker Mayfield, putting him in a body bag and sending him back to Cleveland. We're putting 400K on this.
400K?
The Atlanta Falcons, we are nudging them. They're +9 in Dallas. We're going to nudge that over the 10 mark. +10.5.
Yeah.
-130. Well, we need something to put with it. A little chaser, like a cranberry something. And vodka, like a nice martini.
That's it.
Bucks -450. Bucks just have to beat Washington.
They'll do that.
Washington, disarray. Get them out of here. You put those two together, +116.
I like that.
Falcons +10.5, Bucks just to win, grabbing that. What makes you nervous out of that between those two?
The Falcons, I just, you know.
Falcons just getting demolished.
Yeah, I'm in though. I'm in. I've seen Matt Ryan win a lot of big games and then the next week not win a big game.
They call him Matty Ice. He's really Matty Garbage Time. There's nobody you want more when you're down 13. Third one, a possible one of the locks of the year for me. Broncos at home.
Let's go big on this.
We're going to do 400K. We're putting that with the other two. Broncos, 400K, -2.5 against this crappy Philly team that's 2-6 in their last 8 that is desperately wants to be one of the worst 10 teams in the league because they have 3 first-round picks. They're so excited to see the draft board. For people to go, oh my God, the Eagles, they got 3-7-9. Jesus, holy mackerel. They don't care about this game. If they cared, they'd be playing my guy Minshew. Now they're throwing out Jalen Hurts again. Teddy Bridgewater raining all over them. Just completions. Javonte Williams.
Mm.
A Kyle Brandt angry run special.
Mm.
2 weeks in a row. So that's it. Broncos, 400K, 2.5. Now we're going to do 2 more.
Whoa, Bill.
200K Vikings +3 over the Chargers. 200K Raiders +2.5 over the Chiefs.
Okay.
And then the underdog parlay boosted up by FanDuel, our friends at FanDuel, who we burned once. We cost them $2.5 million 2 weeks ago. It almost happened again. We almost cost them like $4 million last weekend. And now we're going to do it again. Falcons, Raiders boosted from +840 to 10-1.
Love it.
We're going to be putting 33K on that. And just for fun. Just for shits and giggles.
Just a little bit of this.
10K, little sprinkle, splash the pot.
Hey, your favorite number is 33, obviously. My favorite number, I'm a Walt Frazier guy. Do you know Walt Frazier?
12K?
Number? Is it 12?
What was 10, Frazier, 10 or 10. 12?
I think it's 10.
Who was 12?
Is Earl Monroe 10?
Yeah, Earl Monroe was 10. 12? What number was Walt Frazier? Oh no, we have to look this up. It's $1 million picks, Monkey Wrench. Walt Frazier.
This is so funny.
Oh, look at these images coming up. 15? Oh, he's number 10.
10. I thought 10. Well, Earl Monroe was 15, call. Right?
Right. Earl Monroe was 15. Little 10K splash.
Why not?
Falcons, Vikings, Raiders. The mega dog parlay. 10K plus 2,020. we win $222,000 if we win this.
I'll get Walt Frazier to do a cameo for you if we hit this. Let's go.
Well, Walt would say this was an audacious parlay.
Stupendous.
All right. Hey, which one are you most excited about of all those million-dollar picks?
I love it all. I love the big one. And I think that the Falcons beating the Cowboys, Dan Quinn coming in there, Matt Ryan looking at it, laughing and saying, I know this defense.
You know what's going to be hilarious about that Falcons game? They're going to be up 20-7 in the third quarter. And we're going to be texting each other. And then Matty Ice is going to start doing the stuff he does. We know this going in. We know he might hurt our feelings.
I don't know if what your text chains are like with Hench and with Mina Kimes and Danny Kelly, but all Bill and I text, it's just the name of the team and an exclamation mark. Like, we'll go, Falcons, exclamation mark. That's it. That's the entire text chain. It's just team, exclamation mark. And it's like, oh, something happened in that game. Let's toss it on. Yeah, that's it.
Those were the million-dollar picks for Week 10. Can't believe we're in Week 10 already. We could see Peter Schrager on Good Morning Football with Kyle Brandt.
Kyle and I,
Kay Adams, and LeSean McCoy, the new America's new dream team.
We hope. Kyle and I are doing a little Wall Streeters action on Friday morning. So if you're listening, wake up. It's going to hopefully be the best one yet. We play two Wall Street idiots and we have a blast with it.
Excellent. All right. And you see you on Fox as well. Thanks for coming on, as always.
You're the man.
All right. That's it for the podcast. Thanks to Jonathan Sharks. Thanks to Peter Schrager. Don't forget about the Music Box series coming on HBO and HBO Max November 18th. That's a week away. Don't forget to follow on Spotify the new Plain English podcast with Derek Thompson. And don't forget, if you love Taylor Swift, we spun out every single album with Nathan Hubbard and Nora Princiati. And they're going to be, when Red Taylor's version comes out, I think late night tonight, they're going to have a pod ready to go on Friday as well. So, lots of good stuff happening at the Ringer Podcast Network. Enjoy the rest of the week. I will see you here on Sunday.